me?
Probably not, right?
I think so.
Okay, so maybe if you could put your name on a new piece of paper, anybody who's not today, the rest of you guys doing my homeless raid today?
Yeah.
Okay, so basically, I think the agenda for this week would be as follows. That I'd like to do some of the halach l'maisa sugyas in the sixth parak. As halach l'maisa means sugyas that happen to, lamdash sugyas that happen to have some practical significance. And it happens to be that the next two sugyas that come up have a lot of practical relevance. They're not 100% polem related. They happen to impact a few other areas of halakha, so just because they are in our parak, it's not like we'll have other opportunities to see them, so we should take a look at them, but they are negei lemaisa in some interesting ways, so don't want to skip them. So what I mentioned on our immediate agenda, and just also in terms of the schedule for this week, is also mentioned that it's hard to find a situation in June where there aren't going to be some missed nights. So we're not doing so badly. I think this Wednesday night we'll have a Wednesday night in general is a chashuv night. Yeah, there's a couple of things. So there's a couple of chashuv things going on Wednesday night. So you know the expression, you can't dance at two weddings. It's not totally true, but you can't dance at two weddings and give two shiurim the same night. So some things have to move. So that's what I've learned from experience, especially June-related experience. So I think Wednesday night we will have to take off. So we'll be on Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday night this week, and not Wednesday. And I'd like to see these sugyas, which, again, they're not, it's not strictly speaking polo davka, but they're choshen mishpat type issues, which are practical. We'll see how far we get tonight. Tonight also has to be somewhere as well, so we'll be a little bit brief. But basically, starting from Ayin Zayin and Midbeis, the sugya of Ayil V'Nafik Azuzay, which we'll explain what that means if you haven't seen it. And then the sugya on Ayin Chesem and Aleph of Kolamai V'Rol Dasho V'Alabayis, which has some possible very practical ramifications. Maybe we'll start it tonight and probably get into it a little bit more tomorrow night. And that's our immediate agenda, and then move from that to get into some more poll-related sugyas, which come up in these prakim. So basically, first of all, just the sugya of Ayil V'Nafik Azuzay. So here, this Gemara in Ayin Zayin Amid Beis picks up from the discussions that the Gemara has been having for most of the first part of the parak, where it talks about, and this is a lot of these sugyas we didn't do in the past week, we did a lot of them during the semester, but they have to do with boss-employee relationships where one pulls out on the other, where one quits in the middle, one reverses on the other, etc., etc. So in the context of that, so the Gemara gets into these discussions about jobs that get half done, items that get half paid for, and the like, things that are kind of stopped in the middle. So this Gemara has a lot of practical relevance. The Gemara talks about the question of, let's say you pay for something, partially. If you pay for an item without paying for all of it, so what's the status of the rest of the money? What's the status of the owed money? So should we say that the item is purchased? Right? If we assume that most konos, let's say, so in general, it's a machlokas, what's the real kinyan min haTorah? That's really a fourth parak topic, whether it's the money that one pays towards an item or any part of the money that one pays towards the item, or is it that you have to actually take the item, what we call meshicha, and it's a machlokas in the Gemara between Reish Lakish and Reb Yochanan, and the Gemara says that what is true for Jews is inverted for non-Jews based on psukim, which creates all kinds of complications for Mechiras Chametz. And the Gemara basically implies that it's more likely that most konos, that most are really what affects the kinyan, but Chazal made a takana that Meshicha should be the kinyan. Because we're worried that if you pay for something, you don't actually take possession of it, so then the seller will be neglectful in protecting it, let's say from a fire, and he'll say, I already sold to the new guy, and I don't have to take any pains to protect it, so if something happens to it, I'll let it get burnt, I'll let it get destroyed. So in order to make sure he's not going to take that attitude, we don't actually transfer the ownership until there's been Mashiach. So in any event, so in the context of all of these possibilities, the Gemara wants to know, let's say the person has paid for some of the item. So what's the status of the rest of it? You could look at it two ways. You could say that either the seller essentially is ready to transfer the property to the buyer fully with this down payment, and the rest of it will decide that that should be a chov, what's known as the kifa b'milva. So let's say an item costs $100 and somebody paid $20 for it. So there's an $80 balance. So what's the status of that $80 balance? Is it that the seller is not going to want to sell it unless he gets his full amount, so he has not really given it over to the purchaser? Or do we say, no, that he sold it right away for the $20 down payment? What about the $80? The $80, so that either we can assume or that there is an express statement sometimes that that's a zechifa b'milva, that that's treated as a loan. So there's an $80, it's as if he borrowed $80. So he owes $80, he has to pay the $80, but he bought his item full. Like he borrowed it from the seller. So the Gemara suggests that the following ingredient is relevant, the following element. That if the seller is Ayil v'nafik azuz, again, I don't know if your students Gemaras or not, in general, like I said, with or without the Marmakomos, it's encouraged to go further in these Gemaras because you'll see the broad picture anyway. So these are just in terms of these Gemaras over here, in Ayin Zayin and Mekvei Zayin Chesim and Aleph. That if the mocher is ayil v'nafik azuze, meaning that he is yotze v'nichnas, he comes in and out, in other words, he's trepering you about the money, that it's clear to you, it's clear to whoever is watching, that the seller is very concerned about his money. So what's the significance of that? So as Rashi explains, and as the Rush explains, that if that's what's happening, so then it becomes clear that the seller is only interested in selling, or is primarily interested in selling, because he needs quick cash. And therefore, he's pushing you to make sure you pay. So if you're not going to pay everything right away, then he's not interested in selling it to you. He'd rather negate to sell to you and sell it to somebody else. While if he doesn't seem to make such a big deal about the money, so then, if he's casual about it, okay, so he wants to get paid, that's, you know, that's what he's living for, but it's not an emergency for him that he sold this just simply to raise quick cash, so then it's more conceivable that he has intent to sell it to you, and he could be laid back about when you actually pay the rest of it, that's going to be enough. Now, this, as you can imagine, has many halacha l'maisa ramifications that come up, because there are many halachic concerns where people have ownership necessity. They have to, halacha requires you actually own something, and you may not pay for the whole thing up front. Now, part of the, before we discuss of them, so you see the Gemara already alludes to the fact that there are other variables. So, for example, the Gemara talks about, or how you could theoretically have a case, let's say somebody sells a field that he sells because it's a bad field, so he wants to get rid of it. V'pnei Rasa, which is the last line in the sugya that carries on to Ayin Chesem et Aleph. So then, the fact that he's trepping you for the money actually shows you the opposite thing. Right? It actually shows you not that he's hard up for cash, but shows you that he wants to get this field off his hands. And he's worried that you're going to cancel on him. Right? That the field is not such a great deal. So he wants to make sure that this is settled. So he wants to end the period of there being a revocability. So therefore, he's pushing you to pay. So you'll pay, and he'll get his money, and the sale won't get reversed from your end. So if that's the case, if there is such a possibility, so then the fact that he's trepping you doesn't necessarily show that he's interested in his money specifically. He's trepping you, you know, the Yiddish word. He's pushing you. He's annoying you. He keeps coming back and forth and asking you for the money, or the English word is he's dunning you. So if he's doing that, so then what does that indicate? Does it indicate that he only sold this because he wants to raise the cash? And therefore he only intends, basically, what's the intent? His intent is only to give it to you because you give him the cash right away? Or is the intent, no, he's selling it in a laid back way, and it doesn't necessarily mean anything. And or could mean something else, or it could mean that he's eager to get paid for because he's afraid you'll pull out because it's not such a great deal, and that doesn't necessarily have the same implications. So there are a number of halacha l'maisa issues in which this comes up. You could probably think of some in which it would be relevant. But just to mention a few, it happens to be, as the guys from the year know, I'm fond of quoting from the tshuvas of Rav Nosson Gishtetner, Sechel Tzadik Levrach, he happens to have a few tshuvas about this. We'll just mention a few of his points first. Talks about, for example, and he expresses some interesting chidushim in the context of discussing this. So let's say there is a discussion in the Sfarim that talk about the lulav and esrog. That let's say somebody buys a esrog without paying for it all up front. And then the mocher starts hacking you. And let's say he hacks you after Sukkos. Or let's say he hacks you and you don't pay him back till after Sukkos. Sure, should we be concerned that the lulav and esrog is not yours in order to be Yotze Luvanestrik with Unsukkos? So what do you think? So on the one hand, it seems like it's a little bit of an issue, right? That's what the Gemara says. If he's Ayel Venafik Azuze, so then you could get the impression that he's only interested in selling this to you if you're going to pay the whole thing. If you're not paying the whole thing, then he's not ready to wait for the bill, and he's not going to have full intent to be Machne to you. Now, it happens to be that the Laharus Nasan thinks that's not the case. He thinks in the case of the Lulav and Esrog, it is actually transmitted to you, fully, regardless of whatever attitude he seems to be taking. Anyone want to take a stab at why that would be?
Because the mitzvah, the person would want you to have a full shelter.
Oh, so that's very, very idealistic. That could be. It's interesting, there is some truth to that anyway, because you could say that what's the point in selling it to you if he's not going to make it possible for you to fulfill the mitzvah, and if that's going to be a flaw, then that's going to be a problem. But you could also say the opposite. Or you could say that since this guy apparently wants to get paid, so then this is a better thing for him to do. Let him say, I'm dafka not giving it to you unless you pay me fully, because then you won't fulfill the mitzvah. So that's the leverage he has. So let's assume that the mitzvah component could cut both ways and take that out for a second. Alex?
Maybe it's considered like vegetation.
Okay, so you...
It's like karka maybe, and then, I don't know.
And therefore...
You don't think of it as an object.
Well, we don't necessarily know that all karka has the status, but you know, if the status, if it's bad karka, it would have that status.
So, assuming it's like bad karka, in the sense that like
okay, you're on track. There's something else to say about that. It does regress your quality in a big way.
Or,
sorry?
An esrog has it's only a purpose. Oh, it's not true, really. But its only main purpose of the value that it's selling for that time is for during Sukkos.
Oh, exactly. Is that what you wanted to say? You want to say something else?
Yeah. I was going to say maybe it's like return on that in the same way that you can, it's yours as long as you return at the end of the day, so too. When he buys it, it's his as long as at the end of the day he's going to pay for it.
So that's generally the case if the seller doesn't make a big fuss about it. But if the seller makes a fuss about it, if the normal halacha is that it's not necessarily his, so the question is there any difference here? So it could be there are two differences. So one difference is, like Aaron says, that here it's a little bit, it's related to what Alex started to say, that it's a little bit like the bad quality field. Not that it's bad, but it's got a big expiration date. This seller has no interest in getting stuck with an esrog after a Sukkos. It's going to be worthless. And we all know the matzah goes down in price in the supermarkets right after Pesach. Right? So the fact that he's interested in selling it quickly is not because he's looking to raise quick cash. It's because he doesn't have any point in holding on to it afterwards. So that itself will shift the understanding of what's going on. But he also says a very big chiddush, which uses this to apply to other contexts as well. And he says that this whole Gemara is actually only talking about a case. He says it's a pretty big chiddush, but he thinks that this is what Rashi and the Rush are getting at, where you have somebody who sells something that he wouldn't normally be selling. He's not really a seller of this item in a professional sense. So we have to wonder, the fact that he's selling it, maybe it's because he needs to raise money. So he's parting with something he wouldn't otherwise part with. So then, coupled with the fact that you see he's making a big deal about the money, if you're not going to give him the money right now, then he'll sell it to somebody else. So then those two facts together indicate that his main focus is to get the money quickly. But if you have somebody who's a professional, who's selling things regularly, so then we don't have any Anan Sadi that he's only selling today to raise cash. And the fact that he's makbid on getting the cash with some type of promptness, that might just be because that's his business practice, because he knows that if he doesn't remind you, then you're going to forget, and he can't let customers go without paying. So he has his system where he reminds people, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he's motivated by a need to raise quick capital. So he wants to suggest this, this very significant chiddush, that if he's motivated, that if the person is a professional seller who sells this item normally, so then this whole concept of Ayel V'Nafik Azuzei doesn't mean anything. Yes, sir?
I've heard the case of somebody buys a wedding ring with a credit card. That's the
same type of... So then he happens to have another tshuva, and Chelek Yedalet of his tshuvas, he talks about that. But it's interesting, it's a little bit of a different case. The credit card is related. It's interesting, the credit card also involves paying for it later. So then the question is, so strictly speaking, paying for something later shouldn't necessarily be a problem, right? Strictly speaking, the store seems to give you the item fully on the understanding they'll get paid later. The question is, what this Gemara is introducing is if there's some type of indication that the seller's not happy with that, that the seller is acting in some way that indicates this is not normal. So a straight-out credit card shouldn't automatically be an issue. There are those who prefer not to use credit card for wedding rings for related reasons. I'm not 100% sure where the kinyan is in that context. But you don't automatically have to say the fact that it's not paid for right away necessarily is a problem. See, but again, you have all kinds of complications, especially if you're buying the wedding ring. So theoretically, you have similar issues, but you just have to figure out where the kinyan is. But it's very likely that you do have the kinyan under those circumstances. But you can see why somebody maybe would want to eliminate all the sfeikus in terms of when the kinyan actually takes place.
I mean, definitely if someone doesn't pay the credit card bills, maybe it's more of a story to say.
If he doesn't pay his credit card bills. But even if he doesn't, so then the credit card bills become like a debt for him. So it's a zakro for love b'milva. So the store doesn't necessarily not sell him whatever he bought. It's a chakira one could ask when they come.
But then once you're in credit card debt, then they have the right to possess it.
Correct. What does that mean? So if they come and take your stuff, does that mean that the sale was never real to begin with? Or does it mean that this is the only leverage they have to get you to pay the debt? But and therefore the law allows them to do this, but it doesn't necessarily mean they never sold it to you, maybe. Which we'll see has some huge ramifications. Hi.
I thought the way credit card transactions work is that the store sells it to you fully and they get the money and then they just pay a percentage to the credit card company and they try collecting it from the customer.
I think part of it's true. They sell it to you fully, they get the money later, and there's no money coming to them right now. They get the money once the credit card company will give them
money. I'm saying, like, once they give the item to the customer, isn't, like, the customer out of the...
That's what it seems like, right? It seems like they have completely been mocking their item to the customer, and then how they get paid is part of the complicated system that they deal with later. But that does seem to be the case, which is why, presumably, even for the wedding rings and for the Lulav and Nesrogim, it's likely that the Kenyan is absolute. Now, again, when you're dealing with Jews and non-Jews, so then if you're not sure what type of Kenyan works, the Mos, and Mashiach, you can see why if there is a need, Doraisa, to own something, why we might want to be more sure that we've covered all our bases in terms of what qualifies as a Kenyan. But at least on a basic level, is there a das between the two parties? Right, let's assume that all Kenyanim are expressions of das on some level, so if there's a das between the two parties, is that at least the case? That's really what our Gemara is basically dealing with, right? What is the, separate from all the Kenyanim themselves, what is the das here? What is the intent of the seller? Does the seller want to give it to you now because you paid a little bit, and he's willing to wait till the rest comes later as a debt? Or, no, is he only interested in selling this to you when he gets all of his money because maybe he's only doing this to raise the cash right away, and if you're not going to do that, then he'll go with somebody else who will do that. Aaron, you had a question? Okay, so this is a point that he thinks is true. He notes that he quotes a psak from the Mishnah Berurah that seems to be against this, Mishnah Berurah in Hilchos Tzitzis, seems to say that an item is only yours once you have... fully paid for it if the owner is going to ask you for the cash. But he thinks in general that if the seller is a professional, this whole Gemara doesn't apply, which really is his chiddush. You don't have a real strong source from that in earlier Sfarim, just the Rishonim who say that there's an Anan Sadi that he's only doing it to raise money. If he bothers you about the money, So this is a chiddush that it's not necessarily true if the person is a professional seller. So not so much in terms of credit cards, but he does talk about, has a tshuva about, let's say, has a whole scenario here, somebody bought a wedding ring on credit, not necessarily a credit card, but meaning that he will pay for it later. And the deal that he made is that he's going to pay for it 2 weeks after, maybe pay a little bit, he paid nothing, whatever it is, but he has a balance left, and he said that he's going to pay for the balance 2 weeks after the wedding. Then comes 2 weeks after the wedding, and it passes, and the seller is asking him about it, and he says, you know what, actually, I have no intention of ever paying. The wedding was fun, and I got the girl, she's going to stay with me whether or not you come and repossess the ring, so I have no intention of ever paying for it. What do you say about such a scenario? Do we say that retroactively that ring is now stolen? We know that kitsha begezel, if a man marries a woman with a stolen ring, so that's no good. Right? He has to own the ring. He can't steal it. So do we say retroactively this ring is stolen? And the kedushin are no good l'mafreya? Or do you say that wedding is still valid? What do you think about that case? So he thinks the wedding is likely valid. It's a complex real-life situation, as he notes in the tshuva. He doesn't know what all the details are based on what we described him. He thinks the wedding is still valid for a couple of reasons. One is, parenthetically, he just discussed, it's not exactly our sugi here, but it's interesting. So what if, in general, what if the person intends to pay when he first buys a ring, and then decides later he's not going to pay? So do you say retroactively he can become a gazlan when he didn't intend to be a gazlan in the first place? And there's more of a discussion about this that comes up in the context of gittin, that the klaf has to belong to the husband. So let's say he buys that on credit, and then he decides later not to pay for it. The poskim would discuss that maybe the wife shouldn't remarry until the klaf is paid off. That maybe we have to worry that retroactively it'll turn out the get was no good. So that's one question he discusses, that if the person has intent to pay when he buys it, so do you say retroactively he's a gazan? Or even if he doesn't have intent, but there's no way to know that. He goes to a store, he doesn't sneak it out of the store, he doesn't do any overt act of gneva or gzela. He goes through the normal purchasing process. So the seller is makne to him like he's makne to everybody else. We just find out later that he's not going to pay for it. So he's not so sure that you can really say retroactive gzela in such a case. Partially because there'll be all kinds of consequences in both directions. So we need to be able to prove it. And we can't really prove. He's going through the motions the same as anybody else. So how are you going to say in a court of law this person is a gazlan based on just how we assume his intent was, which we can't really prove because his actions will be the same as anybody else's actions purchasing the ring? So that's itself a question. But separate from that question, so what about our sugya, Aaron?
I'm saying in that case he originally wanted to pay it and decided later he didn't want to pay it.
So there's two different ways to look at it. Let's say, first of all, if he originally intended to buy it, pay for it, and then decided not to. So he decides not to with full brazenness, but clearly at that time he's clearly doing an aveira. But retroactively, does that make him a gazlan when he took the ring? If he took the ring, he did the same thing any honest person does. And now later he decides he's not going to pay off his debt. Mm-hmm. So is that a debt that he's not paying, which is an aveira? And it's an interesting question whether that's called gezel or not. That's a whole separate sugya, whether that's called technical gezel. Is it possible to violate those sigzel passively? Is that called something else? So Rashi in the beginning of Sanhedrin talks about this. Is it Gemara Gittin talks about this? It's a whole separate sugya. What's the nature of the aveira if somebody doesn't pay off his debts? If somebody has something that belongs to somebody else and he passively doesn't return it, if he had it beheter and doesn't give it back beisser, so is that gzela or is that some other aveira? But in any event, so here let's say the guy intended to pay for it and then change his mind later. So clearly he's doing something wrong when he changed his mind, but does that mean that retroactively when he got married with a ring that he bought like everyone else, so is that gezel or is that legitimate property that now he's doing an Aveda and not paying for. And the question might even apply, even if his intent was never to pay for it, because since we can't paskin the halacha that we know this is the case, because how are you going to prove it? He's going through the same motions that anybody else would go through, just he never intended to actually take the next step. So maybe again you'll say that we have to treat this woman like a married woman, because how are you going to ever prove that this is basically something he intended to steal? Aaron?
But in this case, it's a gluey milsa by the man himself that there is concern in his das when he originally...
But maybe it's not.
Continued.
But we don't know, especially the case we said before, it's not a gluey milsa, he says. I've done the reverse tshuva. I've been chayzer b'sheila. You know, when I bought the ring, I was a tzaddik. And then I decided I don't want to pay for it anymore.
No, but in our case, you're saying that he said, I never had anything to pay for
it. No, not necessarily. He says, I don't intend to pay for it now. He says, don't bother hacking me anymore, because I'm never going to pay for it. But when he bought it, maybe he intended to pay for it. And then he realized his wedding was too expensive. And yeah, he doesn't like her so much anyway, so he's too lazy to divorce her, but he's not going to pay for the ring anymore. That's already too much. So I don't intend to pay for it. So does that retroactively become gazelle? So he's not so sure that it does. Alex, question on that?
Doesn't the aisle not get gazelle? Doesn't the whole book suggest that it's only about the seller's perspective, we don't care about the buyer?
Well, it's both. We dance between the two. You can't sell something to somebody without him being a part of it, and you can't sell it unless you're a part of it. Well, one can invalidate it. One person's das missing could mess it up, but we need the other person to be involved too. Right?
If he doesn't want to return the ring, does she have a chiyuv to return it?
Oh, so that's an interesting question also. So Pashtus is, it's really, that you could really get lumdish. You could say that if it was always gezel, so she shouldn't take it in the first. It's a good question. It's a good lumdish question. But if it was always gezel, so then what? She shouldn't take gezel in the first place. But if it's his, just he has a debt, so then why shouldn't she keep it? He gave it to her legitimately. It's his property that he owned, and he's now doing an unrelated avera that he's not paying. He's refusing to pay his debt. That's not connected to his ownership of this item, and she's not obligated to pay off his debts.
She's causing him, but it's going to be something evil, because by her keeping it, she's causing him to be over...
Because he'll be over a gezel. If she returns the ring, she can undo his gezel without his participation.
Aren't they married, though?
You can say that, right? So you say, therefore, they share the same funds, so therefore, she is responsible for his... if it's retroactive, it ties in again to the question, is it retroactively gezel or not? But if it's not retroactively gezel, just he has a debt to pay it off, so then that's his responsibility. Even if, you know, even to whatever extent their finances are connected, it's still his responsibility.
Because also the debt was incurred before they got married, bought the ring before
they got... So should that matter? But it's still going to come out the same way. Right? But any gezelas you do while we're married is not my problem. But it's still going to come out the same way. It's still going to be basically his obligation to pay it. And so if it's gezel, so then she said, I don't want to get this bechlal. You know, we see this, and if you ever learn the Luv HaGazel, right, so you find it seems very counterintuitive when you learn the Sugis Mitzvah Bavi Avera. So there's a big focus on before there's a Kinyan Geneva, which sounds like a very funny term. Right? The Kinyan Geneva meaning that the Ganav ultimately takes ownership of the item. How can you take ownership of the item that he stole? It means that at some point it switches from you returning the item itself to the item is no longer returnable, and now you have a debt to pay back the value of the item. So when does it switch from one to the other? So in this case, it's a similar kind of question. That what has to be returned? The ring, because it's stolen? Or no, the ring is legitimately owned, but there's a debt for the value of the ring, and therefore that's what he has to pay back, and let her, she could keep the ring, and she just recognizes that he should pay back the debt. So that's one of the questions in this particular Shiloh. But separate from this, in terms of the Isle of Anufik Azuzeh, it says one technicality, that the post can point out that means that if you set a time for payment, so then if the guy shepherds you at that time, it shows you that he cares. But if the time passes and then eventually says, no, what's up? So then that doesn't necessarily show you that he's particularly concerned about money, and that happened to be the case here. But the third factor, he says in the same chiddush that he said in a different tshuva about the esrog, that if the guy is a professional ring seller, so a professional jeweler, so the fact that he ultimately collects his bills doesn't necessarily show that he did this just for the singular purpose of raising money now, and therefore we don't necessarily have any particular suffix in what he's doing, that this is undone. just before we get off the Rav Nosson Geshadar topic, he happens to have a third tshuva, where he talks about the situation where somebody sold some item to somebody who paid for part of it, and the rest he gave in post-dated checks, checks that have not yet come to their date yet. So the question is, so let's say the seller then decides that he's not happy with the terms of the sale, so does he have the right to cancel the sale at that point and say, I want more, or I want to change the terms? And he assumes, this is also just an interesting practical point, that the fact that the buyer gave him these post-dated checks, could see that as one of two ways. Either that that's actually Piro, because there is value to post-dated checks that will eventually come to be worth something, and you could actually do business with post-dated checks. You can actually use them to buy other things, so it's worth money. So maybe this guy has no taina because the purchaser really paid for it. Or, he says, at least, even if you don't want to consider it Piro, it's at least what our Gemara is talking about of Zakif Alav Bevilfa. You're definitely making it to a debt because you're saying, here is my payment for my future debt. So at the very least, it should count as Zakif Alav Bemilva, and therefore there shouldn't be ability of the seller to cancel the sale once he has the whole value, half in actual cash and half in these post-dated checks. But so those are three tshuvas, and the Horish Nasan talk about this, these related issues. Mm-hmm. But there's another issue that we all deal with where this is very practical as well. And that is Mechiras Chametz. So the question is, and we spoke about this during the year a little bit, but not in the context of this Gemara, in the context of other Gemaras. So the way we do things today, the current state of Mechiras Chametz is the result of a couple hundred years of development of different practices and different scenarios and things that have changed. It's certainly a deviation from what we have in Shas. We don't have an explicit scenario the way we sell chametz today that's described in the Talmud. It's developed the way we have it much later. But one of the ways in which things are done in the contemporary setting, basically, is that first of all, so we have a number of different kinyanim. Because, like we said, it's a machlokes, what's a good kinyan in general? And then, especially if you're dealing with a transaction between a Jew and a non-Jew, so then there's greater ambiguity as to what is a valid kinyan. So since we're dealing with an Isser Daraisa, Ba'ira, Ba'imatze, we want to make sure that we have an absolute total kinyan. So the minig has developed that we basically do as many kinyanim as possible when we sell chametz. We try to get every possible kinyan. And part of the complexity is, what's likely to be the most valid kinyan, actually? So Mashiach, right, that you said? Right, so Mashiach is the best candidate, dealing with a non-Jew, because if we say it's the opposite of what a inter-Jew kinyan is, so then it's really, if it's really most, is most likely the kinyan for between Jews, so then Mashiach is most likely the kinyan between a Jew and a non-Jew, so Mashiach would be the best. Now, we generally don't do Mashiach today. Not necessarily always been the case. It could be that once upon a time when people sold chametz to their non-Jewish neighbor, they actually gave him all the chametz to hold in his house. But nowadays, we generally don't do that. So the best candidate for the most effective kinyan, we usually don't really have the possibility of doing. So all the more so, we try to get in every other kinyan that we can. So one of the kinyanim is Mos, is Kesef. So the purchaser pays some money towards the kinyan. But it's generally not the whole value. Now again, that doesn't have to be the case, didn't have to historically be the case. Theoretically, he could pay the whole value of the chametz up front. But generally, that's not what you and I are dealing with in 2013. When the rabbi is selling chametz on behalf of his whole congregation, it's generally a least 4 or 5, 6 figure sum. And the purchaser is putting a couple of dollars down. Basically say it's a Sheva Pruta or 2 Sheva Prutas per person. So it adds up to a few dollars maybe. So what about the rest? So Pashtus is, the rest he owes. And since he hasn't paid it back yet, so then after Pesach, we come and we say, listen, you still owe me 99% of the value of this chametz. So you got to pay for it. You don't want to pay for it? All right, give us back the chametz and we'll let you off the hook. But it's crucial that that doesn't mean that it was never a sale. we have to assume that this transaction meant that it was a sale 100%. And like we said before about the repossessed furniture, the furniture was sold, and just the store uses the leverage to take it back afterwards. So, okay, so we'll let the guy off the hook if he gives us back the chametz, but we don't want a chalila to give the impression that the sale was never good in the first place. So what about all the missing money that he doesn't pay up front? So the poskim raised the concern of Ayavan Afik Azuzeh. How are we sure that the seller is not makbid to get the full amount? So some say, so therefore we should be makbid to specifically be zokeh for love b'milva, and to make it clear that we're setting up the deal that this is a full transaction. We're selling it for this small percentage of what he's paying. And the balance is a chov. The balance should not be perceived as any way as necessary for the sale to actually go forward. Hi.
How can you say it's a case somebody really wants to get the money by them being makav that therefore wouldn't be a kinyan?
That if...
I mean, you're saying the postman's suggestion that it would be that it, since if people really, really want the money, so therefore it would be a problem, maybe it's not a kinyan.
So you're saying because of the first chametz, because of the chametz realities, it's unlikely.
Well, it's unlikely because by doing that, they're being mafkia the kinyan. No
right, correct. Now, so you're saying since the reality is of Mechiras Chameis, that makes no sense. So that's a valid attitude to take, which is why a lot of poskim aren't so worried about this. Right? Certainly, we mentioned Nasa Gestetner's Tuvis in other contexts, but the svaras that he said by Esrog would apply a little more here. Like, certainly, the seller doesn't want to be in a position where he's stuck with his Chameis. And certainly, it's more important to him to get rid of the Chameis than to get the money. So you could say, Anan Sadi already, that he certainly has full intent to sell it. But nonetheless, there are poskim who are makbid, and this is relatively easy, that you should have a zkifas milve to begin with. And yet, there were still some who were concerned that there may still be grounds to be mevatel the sale. Now, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav was concerned about this, and the Shulchan Aruch HaRav had his own chumrah, that he said that you should therefore appoint another Jew as an Arev on the whole deal, so therefore it's more than a normal halva, and it's guaranteed, but then others thought that's going to create more problems than you had beforehand, because now he's taking our responsibility for chametz. That's a bad idea. So there's a whole literature about this, basically what exactly is going on. But others point out that, again, you know, maybe it means that you theoretically the seller could be mevatel the sale, but clearly the seller doesn't want to be mevatel the sale. If he does, he definitely doesn't know what he's doing. So with all that, it's unlikely to be a real concern. But just so you know, sometimes we partake in mechiras chametz, especially if we're not the rabbanim who are actually doing it, but even the rabbanim who are actually doing it are not always aware of all the cheshbonos that went into every step of what we're doing. So it's good to be aware of this, that basically he's paying this small percentage, and we make sure the context makes itself evident that we are not holding out for the whole sum in order for the sale to be real. If that were the case, then that would really cast aspersions on our whole Mechiras Chametz, and the whole endeavor would be a waste. So therefore, we make it clear that our das is to make a 100% irrevocable sale based on what he is paying us right now. And after Pesach, we're willing to take it back from him. But not that anyone should get the impression that the sale was contingent on the full payment, and that without that, the sale is no good. I think Alex, you wrote first.
Like if the sale is the opposite direction, would there be differences, though? If non-Jewish sale stuff to a...
So that...
We would be concerned with the same thing, wouldn't we? It would be more so.
If he was selling chametz to a Jew before Pesach? We'd be concerned about what? We'd be concerned that...
Doesn't it go both ways, though? Like...
Well, what's the scenario? So a non-Jew is selling chametz to a Jew?
We're selling chametz to him, but if
right.
It was the opposite, would
Well, why are we buying chametz from him before Pesach?
In general, whenever we buy something from a non-Jew, shouldn't this whole cheshbonos go into?
Well, we have the question of what's the actual sale, and you know, what represents the sale, and then there's also going to be other elements as well. You know, there's dina d'malchus adina, and there's minig, there's all kinds of other things that will come into play. We only tend to talk about it when we have a concern for Torah law of some issue, like b'yamotzei or lulav esrog or our wedding rings. So then we get a little bit more concerned. In general, one could say this whole literature is a little bit surprising, because you could say the whole question that the post can bring up, whether a kinyan derabbanan is effective for a halacha daraisa, Yeah, one could say, Lemaisa, if you transfer your property and you have intent to do it because of the Kinyan Derabanan, so why shouldn't that work on a level of Minat Torah? So it's a little bit of a whole Chumra al Gabi Chumra, the fact that we try to make sure we have Kinyan and Daraisa. But in general, all the transactions that don't have to impact on mitzvot, so the Nidl Machusa and others are usually.
But non-Jew would eat the chametz during Pesach, during the interim of the salary, so it,
he'd have to pay for it.
Is he paying back what he ate, or is he paying back, or is he giving back, and then how much is he reimbursing, or how does that work then?
So Pashta says if it turns out that he ends up having to give it back, so if he doesn't have it all to give back because he ate it, then he should pay for it. Pashta. Moshe?
You're contacting the non-Jew for the first time. How do you explain to him that you're doing this sketchy business deal?
It's not sketchy at all. You say to him, listen, we're selling this all to you, and it's a full, complete sale. And after Pesach, you have the right to... We have 1 week to come up with the funds, because for the significant amount that all this chametz costs, and you have 7 days to pay it off. Now, if it comes to be the point that you are not ready to pay it, then we're ready to take it back from you.
How does he think that is a real sale?
Because he has the right to keep it if he wants to come up with all the funds. And sometimes, not too often, but theoretically it could happen, or it could happen in smaller doses, you know, that he could end up taking something, not necessarily all of it, and then he'll pay for that. But theoretically, it's really in his hands. If he's going to come with a check, and he knows there's no surprises for him, right? He knows how much it's worth, and he knows how much he'd have to come up with. And if he does come up with all that, so then, okay, you can keep it.
How much is the usual price?
Whatever it's worth, or whatever the actual market value of the chametz is. So it could be a lot, especially people who have liquor, or people who have businesses. It could be a lot. You know, it could often be, you know, like I say, I go to the Mass Mechiras Chametz in Riverdale, where there are 30, 40 shuls involved to one seller. He's really dealing with millions of dollars worth of chametz. But Willie happens to prefer the fact that he deals with a purchaser who happens to be a businessman and a real estate agent. And one of the reasons he prefers dealing with him, among a couple of other things also, is because as a businessman, theoretically, he could raise the money if he really wanted to. If he decides he wants to keep the chametz, it's attractive to him, then theoretically he could do it, while people who sell it to others who are not as financially capable, so then it has a little bit less of that real aspect to it. But when you're dealing with somebody of such potential, so at least you have that element that if he wants to, again, he wouldn't have to necessarily buy everything, you know, but whatever he wants to keep, theoretically, it's his. Right, so that the sale should for sure be valid because it was his, right, at the time when he sold it. We shouldn't be able to repossess it from him because he sold it to that person and it was his right to sell. You know, it's a physical problem because it tends to be in the possession of others, but that's not necessarily an issue per se. So he should have the right. First of all, if he comes and seizes it, he should have the right to do that. That'll make things more absolute. If he comes to your house and says, listen, I want the bread, he picks it out of your house and sells it, so then he certainly should have the right to do that. And then he'll have to pay you for what he doesn't pay. Similar goes back to our original sugi here, that he has a debt to pay for what he bought and he didn't pay for, so he has to satisfy his debts. Hi.
When you make the sale to the non-Jew, do you have to tell him these things, like clarify that he can go and take the free credit whenever he wants?
Ideally, you should. Yeah, I mean, would the sale be valid if you don't? Presumably, but if you want to make things as above board and 100% as possible, you definitely should. If you're relying on the fact that he won't because you didn't tell him and he thinks and you're relying on
his case.
So I think it's better to let him know that he can and make it clear that this is 100% a genuine sale and that it's available for him. In general, we spoke about Mechiras Chametz a little bit during the year, so I'm not necessarily going through all of it now, but just the part that's relevant to this sugya. But I think anything, just as a matter of general rule of thumb, anything that you can do both for yourself and for the purchaser to emphasize that it's a real genuine sale in every sense of the word is kedai. So you should certainly make it available to him if he wants. And you should also tell him, so you shouldn't do a harama to yourself, you know, it shouldn't be a joke that, well, if he wants, he can take it, knowing that he's not going to think he can. because he'll think he's doing something wrong from your religion if he does it. So that's, you know, also kind of a fake out. So it is better if you let him know that it's available for him if he wants it. Okay, so those are some of the points. There are other halacha ma'isa points here. First of all, also the fact that if you owe somebody money, then you can pay back in very small, inconvenient doses, which is not so nice to the lender or the vendor, whoever it is, but Lamaisa is considered to be a piron, even though he could have tarumas on you. During the year, we talked about what exactly tarumas means. Tarumas is an expression the Mishnah has when somebody has a grievance on you, which is not actually monetary, but there is a whole discussion of what he can do with his grievance, but he doesn't necessarily have a monetary claim against you. So this is, the Gemara invokes it here as well, that if you owe somebody $1 million and you decide to give him 100 million pennies, a few a day for the next couple of decades, assuming that you had that much time, whatever it is, but you give him small pennies, so then it's called a piron, even if that's not what he wants. So these are some important dinim that come out, halach l'maisa, from this Gemara in Zayin and Midbeis. And Chesman Aleph, we'll talk about tomorrow, has some very major practical ramifications, topic of a very major machlokus that's relevant to our lives and increasingly relevant in the era of programs and internet and downloading and the like, intellectual property issues. So God willing, we'll spend some time talking about that very important topic tomorrow. Major discussion of the sugya of Maiver Aldas Balabas Nikra Gazan. So that's a major sugya we'll God willing pick up tomorrow. Again, Wednesday we're off, we'll be back on Thursday, but we'll try to, everyone here, except for, we only have one person sign this, Mordechai, except for Mordechai Weiser, everyone else is on the Marmara Kobus list? Cause,
No, I haven't got it.
You haven't gotten it? You get anything today either? Did you check?
I'll check
right now. Because I lost one of the lists. So put your name on this list also. I lost one of the lists, so if you didn't, have a fantastic night. How you doing? How's the work?
Oh, it's great.
I did
it. The whole day.
You're in criminal court?
Criminal court.
Oh, wow.
It's a bunch of criminals.
Lower Kings County, but it's IDV.